Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
All right, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty with you. Got a big show on deck. Corey, how you doing today?
Doing great, Dalton.
And we'll be talking with South Alabama Athletic Director Joel Erdman here in just a second. Just an FYI, I know it's a busy week we've got coming up with the Alabama High School basketball Final Four and championship games coming up. Also, of course, it's a big Mardi Gras week. We're wrapping up the 2020 Mardi Gras season. So in full honesty, we are recording this a little bit earlier. We normally live on Monday nights, but we're recording on Saturday morning. So if you hear some things that sound a little out of whack tonight, hopefully things haven't changed too much. But we are recording this a little bit earlier. I'll be doing some Mardi Gras stuff Monday night. Corey, what are you? You're going up to Birmingham, right?
That's right. I'm going to be broadcasting the Final Four from Birmingham, the AHSAA Final Four, Monday through Saturday. So I'll be up there all week long with the AHSAA radio network.
All right, and lots of stuff going on, around the country, but specifically here at home and at the University of South Alabama. Two big tournaments for both the baseball and softball team this weekend, and basketball for the men and women's teams. They keep doing their thing with games later today, which is Saturday. And what better time to have on South Alabama Athletic Director Dr. Joel Erdman. Dr. Erdman, thank you so much for coming on Sports Night with us.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate the opportunity.
So it's busy, busy, busy at South. And, you know, I've talked with you a couple times. Corey's probably talked to you a million times. And a lot of our listeners out there, I want to let them know a little bit about who you are, a little bit more about Dr. Erdman, the person, not just what's going on right now with athletics. How long have you been athletic director with South, and how long have you been involved with the university?
You know, unbelievably, I'm in my 11th year as athletic director, but in total, I've been here at South on three different occasions for 18 years, and I originally came here in the 90s as a baseball graduate assistant under Coach Kittrell. I came from University of the Pacific out in California, and then I left and finished my doctorate in sport management at Florida State. And then I was fortunate to return and be on faculty and continue to coach. And then I transitioned to administration under my predecessor, Joe Gottfried, who was very good to me. And in 2002, I became athletic director at North Alabama in Florence. And then I went to be athletic director at Southeastern Louisiana in Hammond, and was fortunate to come back to South in the summer of 2009. I'm originally from the Dakotas. My undergraduate degree was from South Dakota State, and happy to be in the Deep South. Love Mobile, Alabama. Love and respect the University of South Alabama, and very fortunate every day to do what I do.
So you've seen universities, obviously, you just laid that out for us. You've seen all kinds of different universities, from small ones to big ones, and pretty campuses, and I'm sure not so pretty campuses. And what you've done, and what the administrators over there at South have done, especially over these last 11 years that you've been athletic director, I'm sure you've seen so much growth in your departments. Of course, we've got the football stadium being built, and I'm guessing it should be ready to roll later this year. But what were your goals when you took over as athletic director, and how far along do you think we've come at South into accomplishing those goals?
You know, the 10 years ago, I was very fortunate to have a department that was on good, stable ground by the good work of my predecessor, Joe Gottfried, and administrators such as Pam Young and Hal Williams and others, and great coaches. So it was not a matter of having to fix anything. It was a matter of let's look at where we're at. And what we did early on was did a lot of traveling and a lot of visiting other campuses and you know, for lack of a real formal term, look at their stuff and see what their locker rooms look like. You know, what do their stadiums look like? What do their weight rooms look like? And started to do a very objective evaluation of how do we compare, and then laid out a somewhat informal, but it did have structure to it, a 7-8 year plan in which we would touch every sport that we would have. And at the end of that plan, even though it was never publicly discussed or it was not in formal motion, if you will, was always an expectation that there is going to be a day that we have got to have a football stadium on campus, and we're not there yet, but I need to take care of all these other items on our list, because once we get to that point that we can dig in on an on-campus football stadium, it's gonna pretty much consume us. And so we were very fortunate. We went to work. We raised money. We got the support of donors and other entities, and we were able to improve and touch every sport that we have. And now, yes, we're full steam ahead and on target and on budget with playing our first home football game on campus in Hancock Whitney Stadium. And you know, I need to really recognize, I can't say by name because there's just too many, but this is a long process that dozens and hundreds and thousands of people have touched. And there's a smaller number of people that have been deeply involved and committed to the concept of the stadium, to the funding of the stadium, and then the planning and engineering and building of the stadium. And so it's far from just a Joel Erdman deal. It is not a Joel Erdman deal. It is a team deal. And but we're very, very excited. And we think we're in a good place. We always have to have a sense of urgency. We got to get better every day. And I truly believe we're doing that.
And you definitely are doing that within your leadership. You're looking at the Vic Bubas Cup that is given to every Sun Belt Conference member has an opportunity from an overall athletic standpoint to win this trophy. And you're going back and you're looking at South Alabama was the four-time consecutive winner of this, 15, 16, 17, and 18. And that's from an overall athletic standpoint to where you honoring the former commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference. And I know you take tremendous pride knowing that not only your coaches but your student athletes have put themselves to be very successful in the Sun Belt Conference.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, we philosophically do not tier sports here, and we have the exact same expectations of every sport, and that is to compete for championships and do so in a way that we can all be proud of. We fully fund scholarships in every sport. We are mindful of our staffing. We are mindful of our facilities. So I can't expect people to be successful and win at a level that's desired unless they have a reasonable chance and reasonable resources. And, you know, there are departments out there that kind of tier sports. You know, these five we're going to really focus on. The next five or six are in a kind of different level, and the other five or six kind of hold on the best you can. And we're fortunate. We choose not to do that. You know, some sports are more noticeable, if you will, from a society standpoint, and that's understood and somewhat expected. But whether it's tennis or golf or football or basketball or track and field or softball or baseball, it's all the same to us. And We value each student athlete the same. We value each coach the same, and we have the same expectations across the board.
And that's obvious, Dr. Urban, and that's what I respect about your leadership and your athletic leadership as well. When you're talking about looking across the board, I know there can be a day on South Alabama's campus to where you'll have a track meet, you'll have softball, you'll have basketball, men and women's, you'll have baseball, you'll have maybe five or six events going on to where your athletic leadership team is spread out, but you try to touch bases with each one of those sports and let them see that you're supporting each and every sport. And I think that's continued to grow the South Alabama community, because I know from the time that you've been the athletic director, you've seen the growth of the campus, not only from an athletic facility standpoint. I mean, you're looking at the renovations that have been made in baseball. The new John Lieber clubhouse for baseball is state of the art. You're looking at the improvements when I'm walking through Jag Gym and I'm seeing the volleyball, the soccer improvements, the track and field improvements, the golf improvements. It's across the board to where you're allowing those recruitable student athletes, when they see or hear South Alabama, that brand that goes across the national platform, they take great pride in that, and I know you do as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's we're part of the greater vision, if you will. You know, we are a member of the university family, and the growth of the university, you know, is led by the leadership of the president and the board of trustees, and from President Whitten to President Moulton to now President Waldrop and vice presidents and board of trustee members. I was here in the 90s when we were really known, and we were a commuter school, and over the past 20 years and really at a higher pace the last 10 to 12 years, the evolution of the campus to more of a residential campus, a more traditional looking campus, and that is through, that's done on purpose, that's done with a plan and strategically, and it is I've always loved the University of South Alabama, but the South Alabama of 2022 is a lot different than the South Alabama 2012 and 2002 and 1992. And it will continue to evolve into the next 50 years. And we just happen to be a part of that. And it really is it's a privilege and an honor to be a part of it, that this evolution and this growth. We have something very special here in West Mobile, and part of what we have to do a better job at is to get people to come out here and see it. You know, if people have not been on our campus for 15 years, 10 years, they have no idea. And, you know, that was also part of why we needed to have an on-campus stadium, was instead of 15, 20, 25,000 people going off campus, they're coming onto campus, and that will include fans from other schools who have never been on our campus and can start to see what we have to offer. So, you know, you hit the nail right on the head that we are a different place and a continually changing place for the better every day.
We're talking with Dr. Joel Erdman, athletic director at the University of South Alabama. And Dr. Erdman, I graduated from South Alabama, but I spent my first 2 years of college at Troy University, a school I'm sure you know very well. And unlike South for the last 10 years, they did have their football stadium on campus. And I did realize that it seemed there that there, even though there weren't as many and aren't as many students going to Troy as there are south, there seemed to be more student engagement on game days. And they were just able to, you know, walk from the dorms down to the game and then walk back at night. And I think that'll be huge when the stadium opens. How far along are we in construction? What are they working on right now with Hancock Whitney Stadium?
You know, we I think it's fair to say we are 80 to 85% complete. We are hoping to gain occupancy this summer, and knock on wood, we've not had anything substantial which is impacting that. You know, I our intent is to get in there this summer, have potentially the months of June or July and August to turn things on and make things work, and make sure they work in a continuous fashion, and make sure we're set up and ready to go for a great game day experience. And you know, and you bring up a great point with Troy. They've done a wonderful job with their campus. Dr. Hawkins and their leadership have done a tremendous job at growing who they are and what they do, and you're absolutely correct. They have a very engaged fan base, and I think that's part of the longevity of football on campus there, and the success that they've had at the Division II, the FCS, and the FBS level, and that's the road we're going down. You know, and the location. Sometimes people ask, We're a rare campus in that we have an abundance of acreage. Mm-hmm. And we had options on where we could place Hancock Whitney Stadium, and where it is placed on the west edge of campus, if you will. One of the primary reasons was that is literally across the street from the majority of our on-campus housing, whether it's residence halls or on-campus apartments, or the Greek system. And so we've got roughly, you know, 3,500 to 4,500 students that can look out their window and see the stadium and have plenty of green space to have pregame activities and fun. And I think we're really set up to have a fun, traditional game day tailgating experience I had somebody walk up to me with a car. Sorry. Our campus is set up really well to have a fun game day experience, great tailgating, great traffic ingress and egress, and just an abundance of parking. And so it's going to be fun. You know, we've got some work to do, but that work is fun work to accomplish.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, we're talking about September 12th versus Grambling. I do believe will be the first opponent at the Hancock Whitney Stadium. I know you have plenty of festivities and just a great schedule when you look at Grambling coming to town, followed a couple of weeks later by Alabama Birmingham. That's going to be a lot of fun because the rivalry that was created between South Alabama and UAB in the late 80s, early 90s. Dr. Urban, I came to Mobile, Alabama when I was 4 years old, and my mom and dad were employees of the University of South Alabama until they retired. And you grow up a Jaguar. You grow up loving and the University of South Alabama and that flowing through your blood, just like you see a lot of Alabama and Auburn fans and their parents went there. But you talked about the growth of the university to where now, when you're born, you can have that Jaguar apparel. And I know you guys signed an Adidas deal across the school, and I think that's huge too. But when you can see babies in Adidas branding growing up with South Alabama apparel on, from the time that they're in the crib until they have visions of one day playing on that stadium, in that Hancock Whitney Stadium, or in any Jaguar sport, I know you have to take great pride in that.
It is, and you know that really is part of the bigger picture. The largest picture is the seeds that we're sowing right now, you know, we probably will not realize the outcome of this for another generation or two. And you know, our students that had a full, you know, 4 or 5 years, sometimes 6 years experience with a football bowl subdivision team, are really in their, they're still in their mid-20s. You know, our alumni that have had, our students that were here during the entire time to watch a full slate of FBS games and bowl experiences are still relatively young. Mm-hmm. And you're correct where we've got to get into that generational cycle where those students turn into season ticket holders, and their children and their grandchildren come to games, and all of a sudden you've captured a large number of people who have tradition, have a way of doing things on a Saturday, and they go to the same place all the time, and that is what is going to be our challenge, to make sure we're nurturing that and encouraging that, and then exploiting it, if you will. And you know, there's a potion that needs to happen. They've got to have a great game day experience, which they will, and we've got to have enough reasonable success that keeps them engaged. And so that's where the work comes in, is you've got to kind of create that magic circumstance where we're experiencing success in wins and losses, while at the same time to capture those customers in the 2020s, you've got to have that game day experience that is fun, that's social, that has the technology that fans today expect. And I know that when people come to Hancock Whitney Stadium, they're going to get that.
That's some good stuff, and certainly an exciting time to be a Jaguar or a Jaguar fan. Dr. Joel Erdman, thank you so much for joining Corey LeBounty and myself on Sports Night.
It's been a privilege, fellas, and I appreciate you having us.
Thank you, and thank you for all that you've done for South Alabama. I know I'm an alumni, and Corey, he said he's a huge fan, so we're looking forward to getting out there to Hancock Whitney this following season.
All right, fellas. Go Jags.
Go Jags. That's Dr. Joel Erdman, athletic director at the University of South Alabama, and what a great guy. What great things he's done for campus. I mean, look at everything that's showing up right there at Old Shell and University.
Unbelievable, Dalton. When you start driving down Old Shell Road or University and you're seeing the athletic facilities, the John Lieber Clubhouse, you're looking at Stanky Field, you're looking at the softball improvements. If you go into the Mitchell Center, if you were part of that Auburn versus South Alabama basketball environment, the men are trying to turn the program around, have gotten them in a situation to where they're trying to compete and win a Sun Belt Conference title, as well as Terry Fowler. So just a exciting time, and I can't wait till September 12th and look forward to having Dr. Erdman on in a couple months to just kind of give us an update on the progression, not only of Hancock Whitney, but of the other athletics as well.
Certainly. And man, hey, I can't wait to check out that new stadium. And coming up, we'll be talking later on this month, or I guess it'll be March at that point, we'll be talking how South is looking heading into Sun Belt Conference play. And of course, baseball's getting started. You know, they began the year with a top 25 ranking, and they've had a little bit of trouble here to start the year, but they did play one of the top ranked teams in the nation in Vanderbilt. So lots to get into over the course of the year with South Alabama athletics, and a lot more to get into tonight. We're talking about the NFL and that new CBA proposal, as well as where we stand in the NBA. Coming back, more Sports Night.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty with you. Thank you to Dr. Joel Erdman, athletic director, South Alabama. A very informative interview with him there for everything that's going on It's South Alabama on campus. They've got the football stadium coming to life, the new Luis Gonzalez hitting facility. You got the Lieber Clubhouse, and everybody's doing their thing. And a lot of that's thanks to Dr. Joel Erdman. And look forward to getting him on again soon, as well as other coaches from around the university. Corey, there's a lot to get into in the world of sports. And the NFL, we thought at the end of last week, it looked like they might be getting close to signing a new CBA with the NFL Players Association. Now, you got to know that when Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport are tweeting, they get that information from somewhere. It's sourced information. And a lot of times, just like you'll see if you listen to Mobile Mornings or Midday Mobile, when you have breaking news from the government, a lot of times you got to look at who's sourcing that information. And Schefter and Rappaport, they've built up a lot of contacts over the years. They have a lot of players that give them breaking news, but I imagine a majority of their news comes from front office people and people that work pretty high in the NFL organizations. And I think that's why we see some reports like we do from them that the CBA is really close to being a done deal, and some of the stuff that's put out there looks like it's really good on behalf of the players. And I think a lot of times you get owners that feed them that information. So last week when the news came out that the NFL owners have agreed to their part of the agreement, now it was just up to the players, there was some really big breaking news, and it could look like the NFL is becoming a different beast if this ends up being signed. And since then, we saw a lot of players speak out about it. J.J. Watt, Richard Sherman said that they're not necessarily for what we're seeing right now with this current CBA proposal. Now, the current CBA was signed a decade ago, and it runs out at the end of this 2020 season. And if nothing is agreed to by next offseason, then we will enter another lockout like we've seen before, where players refuse to show up to work until they get what they want out of this agreement. But the earlier they can agree to a new CBA, the better. And that's why they're trying really hard to go ahead and get this buttoned up by the beginning of the 2020 season. And just to run through what could look different if they do sign this current proposal, some of the bigger things that we would notice watching the games is they would expand the playoffs, and that would happen immediately if it's signed. That would happen in the 2020 season. The playoffs would be expanded from 12 total teams to 14 total teams, so 7 teams with each conference. And instead of 2 teams getting a first round bye and 4 total wild card games in the first round of the playoffs, you would have only 1 team from each conference get a bye, and then each conference would have 3 wild card games. So I think you'd get a noon game Central Time, and then a 3:30 game Central Time, and then a night game 7 or 7:20, and that would happen on both Saturday and Sunday of the first round of the playoffs. First off, that would be huge news. 2 more teams with a chance to win it all. But on top of that, something that's been talked about a long time now, this would happen beginning in the 2021 season. They would expand the regular season to 17 games, decrease the preseason to 3 games, and on top of that, a major shift in revenue. The players' revenue share would go from 47%, where it is now, up to 48.5%, a shift of $5 billion, which means a lot of these players would be getting raises and the salary cap would rise. So, Corey, some huge news, and we can talk about any part of that. Where would you like to start with regarding the CPA?
You know, I think that one of the biggest things is for me is games 16 going from 16 to 17 games in the regular season, shortening the preseason. Now, I'm for shortening the preseason, and I would love to see an additional game, but I don't want to see an additional game at the expense of a superstar who I'm paying high amounts, dollar amounts, to go see play, not to play. And it's essentially called load management, is what the NBA calls it, and any other professional sport. When you have a particular player who's sitting out, who is not injured, they're just sitting out because they want to rest, I don't think that's fair to the person who's paying high dollar ticket amounts.
Yeah.
that's a sticking point for me.
And we've seen that before in the NFL, but not very often. You normally have one or two teams that have run away with their conference, or they're stuck in a particular playoff position, and then maybe week 16, or it would be week 17, but the 16th game of the season for that team, or maybe even the 15th game, we'll see them take that rest. And just like the NBA, you said, load management, that would be a big problem. But also, by expanding the playoffs, then you add just another team. I think that we would have more teams locked in earlier.
Yes.
And that points to what you're saying. And I'm also worried about, kind of like college football, although college football, they don't get any preseason games unless you count inter-squad scrimmages. They don't always seem ready to roll that first week of the season. Now, I know they'll still get three preseason games, and a lot of times the stars might play, what, a quarter or two quarters total throughout the entire preseason. But I also don't want to see some of these NFL guys get in and week one be completely not ready for the rest of the regular season.
And that's huge too, Dalton. I mean, you're in a situation, not only that factor. I think another factor that I love to jump on is the roster jumping from 53 to 55.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, you're saying, well, that's only two. But again, if you're going to add additional games, I think you need additional players, not only added to your game day roster, but also your practice squad roster. And I think that's huge. That's going to be in the CBA as well. That's kind of stalling right now in collective bargaining.
Yeah, because you had, I think there's like a 7-person board for the Players Association, and they actually voted to send it to a larger committee of, I think, 32 representatives, or it might be more than that. Okay, it was an 11-person board with the NFLPA, and they voted 6-5 not to recommend the proposal, and they sent it on to a larger conference of players. Now, you do have these players that make a lot of money, the J.J. Watts, the Richard Shermans, and they might not be as willing to jump on this as someone who has been in the league 2 years and might make it onto the practice squad, might eke out a spot there at the tail end of the active players or the game day active list, which that would also expand. You said, so 53 to 55 overall roster, and active players would expand from 46 to 48, and you'd have 12 practice squad players in 2020, and then 14 in 2022. That's going up from the 10 that they currently have. Why don't they just make all the players? That's something I don't understand, why they don't make all the players active. You got 55 players. I know a lot of it has to do with strategy and which coaches are able to out-coach other coaches, but you got 55 players that are ready on game day. You might as well go ahead and let them all play. I see J.J. Watt get involved, and I don't know how many more years he's going to play, 1 year, 2 years, so maybe 3 years. Who knows how long? He's a monster. He can go forever, but it seems to me like he's not agreeing with this on behalf of future players. He's
right,
trying to hold out for a better deal for future NFL players, because if this does end up being a lockout situation, that could be the end of J.J. Watt's career. He would just lose a season off the end of his career.
And what's interesting about J.J. Watt is every team has a player representative. And to my knowledge, J.J. Watt is not even the Houston Texans representative or spokesman, but he is the biggest star of that franchise. And you can call him a dwindling star or whatever you want to call him, but J.J. Watt and the things that he's done for the Houston Texans community and for that franchise are invaluable. But again, the stickler points, do I want J.J. Watt coming out on social media speaking against the collective bargaining agreement? He's entitled to his opinion. It's just interesting to me, Dalton, that he is not the official mouthpiece for the Houston Texans organization.
And it looks like Tuesday will be the day NFL Players Association is going to hold that vote, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Something else is interesting, too, is they want the elimination of game suspensions strictly for positive marijuana tests.
Okay.
What does that tell you about the not fun league, all right, in regards to players being drug tested or currently smoking marijuana, mm-hmm, as a whole in the league?
You know, I think the NHL, I don't believe they test for marijuana, and I'm pretty sure that the NBA doesn't either. The NFL, if you look at any of the leagues currently right now that are popular in America, other than boxing and MMA, which do test pretty strictly for marijuana, NFL is probably the most physical game of any that you can play. And we've seen the opioid abuse from players in the past. I mean, we don't need to exactly rehash out this conversation, but there's a bunch of reasons why it would be better for NFL players to smoke a little marijuana after the game if they need it. If they've got this physical pain, than it is for them to be getting shot up with Toradol before the game and going through all of these different, you know, opioid withdrawals. I think it's a little late. I think that they should have hard drugs tested for, but as far as marijuana itself, I don't think they should be tested for that, and I agree with the players for making that a sticking point in their conversations with the league here. They also want to reduce the number of players that are subjected to testing for marijuana, and they're also trying to get some of that gambling money too, Corey.
That's big.
They have to. They have to ensure that they're going to get part of that revenue, because you know that the NFL, the league, is going to be cleaning up once they start to get a hold of that revenue. So that's all pretty big talking points there for the players. I do think, if I had to guess, and we'll see both sides kind of battle it out here over the next few months, and I think talks will probably hit a major snag once we get closer to the season, but I do think they'll get this taken care of. I don't think we'll see a lockout. There's just too much money on the line for both the owners and the players, and I do think they'll get this taken care of. Hey, that is good news, I guess, if they pass this through for Greg Robinson. I don't know if you heard what Greg Robinson got into last week. We'll talk about that when we get back. Also go over some of the NBA standings right now and Kyrie Irving done for the year. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty with you on this Lundi Gras Monday. Hope everyone's having a great Mardi Gras week. Of course, Fat Tuesday coming up tomorrow. Be safe out there. If you're driving around, don't drink and drive. Although you probably don't need us to tell you that. It's very dangerous, and you could end up in the slammer. At least that's according to the sign above the bayway that I was driving under earlier today. Corey, got a busy week, and we're deep into the NBA season at this point. Also college basketball, and more news coming out than at any point the last few weeks as far as the NFL free agency draft prospects. We've got the NFL Combine starting up, I believe, this coming Sunday. It'll be later this week that the NFL Combine begins, and we've got some news on Tua Tagovailoa. He said where he wants to get drafted and also how his health is looking as he enters the biggest part of his current football career. But I did want to go right now into the NBA standings as we get, we're probably about 28, 30 games out from the end of the regular season. And the spots are starting to get locked into. There's not a whole lot of room for some of these teams that are currently not in the playoffs and trying to move into the playoffs. Now, full disclosure, we are recording this show a little bit early, so there's going to be some movement in the standings before it airs on Monday night. But you look at the Eastern Conference, which to me has the current best team in the league, the Milwaukee Bucks, and probably right now I'd say the second best player in the league. You'll probably argue with me on that one, Corey, but Giannis Antetokounmpo. LeBron is still my guy. I still say he's the best in the entire league, but Milwaukee is in a pretty comfortable spot in the Eastern Conference with the number one seed. The defending champion Toronto Raptors are 6.5 games behind them as of Saturday. They're in the two seed. Then you got Boston 3 seed, Miami 4 seed, Philly sneaking up on Miami right now. They're in the 5 seed. They're 12.5 games back from Milwaukee and only a half game back from the 4th seed of Miami Heat. Then you have Indiana 6th, Brooklyn 7th, and Orlando 8th. Now, every team from the Pacers up, 6 seed up in the Eastern Conference, are pretty good and locked in, I'd say, to the NBA playoffs right now, unless either the Pacers, Sixers, or Heat just have huge losing streaks. I think they're locked in. You got to look at those last two teams in the Eastern Conference right now, Brooklyn, and Orlando, and the teams that are right behind them. Washington, 3 games back from the second wild card. Charlotte right now, 4.5 games back. Chicago, 5 games back. I think those are probably the teams that we need to watch in the Eastern Conference, and especially Brooklyn, who, of course, has been without Kevin Durant, even though he signed there this last offseason. We knew he probably wouldn't play this year. But Kyrie Irving, who's had shoulder problems all season long and will now undergo surgery and miss the rest of the season, looks like Brooklyn might not be long for the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough situation for Brooklyn because you already were minus Kevin Durant, who has not played a single game this season, currently in rehab for his Achilles injury. Then you lose Kyrie Irving, who is just a tremendous playmaker and makes those around him better. So you're kind of teeter-tottering on that seventh playoff position that you could, over these next 25 games or so, possibly even fall out of playoff contention, which is tough. But we've been saying this for the last 5 or 6 years about the Western Conference being stronger than the Eastern Conference.
Much stronger.
And I just think that that's so much evident as you look in the Western Conference, as Portland, who lost to the Pelicans last night.
Mm-hmm. Friday night, rather.
You're in a situation to where the playoff spot between San Antonio and Portland and the battle for that eighth and final playoff spot with the Memphis Grizzlies, who are currently in the eighth playoff spot. I love that battle much more. And Popovich possibly missing the playoffs with the San Antonio Spurs, I think that would possibly be the first time in over 20 years mm-hmm. that the Spurs have not made the playoffs at the end of the regular season here coming up in April if they don't make it.
It's going to be a dogfight for that eighth spot. From spot number 7 on up, Dallas, they're 9 games back, and they're in the 7th seed currently alongside Oklahoma City, who's the 6th seed. They're both 9 games back from the top seed at LA Lakers. So really it is all about that 8th spot that's currently held by Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies. And the Pelicans, you mentioned their win on Friday night. That was a big win over Portland. They are now 4 games back from that 8th spot that's currently held by Memphis, and in between you got San Antonio and Portland. But, you know, good news, you got in the playoffs if you make that 8th seed. Bad news is you're probably running into a buzzsaw because you're going to have to take on the number 1 seed in the first round, and that's the Los Angeles Lakers, who are currently 5 games up on the second place Denver Nuggets. And it's a bit surprising that the LA Clippers, who I'd say are the second or third best team in the league right now, that they're only a 3rd seed. And I think the reasoning behind that, and tell me if you agree with me, Corey, is the load management and the amount of time that Kawhi Leonard takes off. Paul George didn't play for quite a bit of the season, I believe, and that's why their record maybe isn't right there alongside the LA Lakers. But they're just as dangerous. I know personally as a basketball fan, I'm just hoping that the Clippers are able to at least stay in that 3rd seed and they don't fall back to a 4th or a 5th seed, because if they do fall into the 4th or 5th seed, we're not going to get the LA-LA conference final that we want. We're going to end up with an LA-LA, I guess, semifinal. I'm bad with the quarterfinals and semifinals, but that would be a second-round matchup instead of the final Western Conference playoff round.
Yeah, you want things to fall to where you will have all games at the Staples Center mm-hmm. in the Western Conference. Now, if that is a situation, the Lakers will do so without DeMarcus Boogie Cousins, who was waived this week. To me, coming off the All-Star game, Coach Frank Vogel had talked about DeMarcus rehabbing. DeMarcus had joked on a podcast that LeBron should run for president, and I don't think DeMarcus saw this coming. I know I did not, being a huge DeMarcus Cousins fan. And, you know, DeMarcus hasn't been able to play coming off that torn ACL that he suffered prior to the season starting. And again, you know, a couple of years ago, he was battling back from his Achilles injury. But for him to be waived, that kind of shook me a little bit, because I would love to have seen him and AD and LeBron play together in the postseason. And if things would have been going the way that DeMarcus had planned for them to go, he might have been available for the Los Angeles Lakers in late May or possibly the finals in June.
Yeah, I hate it. Absolutely hate it for Boogie. I'm hoping that he's able to completely recover from this and end up with a good team with a chance to win a title here in the future. And I would like to go in on Yahoo Sports and some of these some of these media organizations that are calling him a disappointment. I mean, what are you supposed to do? You get injured, right? He can't. Injuries are just something you can't plan for. Now, if he was going out and getting drunk every night and not in shape, that's one thing to call him a disappointment. But injuries, I mean, come on, you got to lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't like this article by Yahoo Sports, and it was Jason Owens from Yahoo Sports who says Cousins never played for the Lakers. Okay, we know that, but he was a disappointment in Golden State too. Absolutely not a disappointment in Golden State. I mean, he did sign a one-year $5.3 million deal with the Golden State Warriors after coming off of that Achilles injury. But, I mean, playing with the superstars that he played with in Golden State, you saw it evident. I mean, he played through tremendous pain, even through the thigh injury that we thought that he possibly tore something in his thigh and was not going to be able to participate. He found a way to bounce back from that. DeMarcus Cousins is one of the gutsiest players that you'll ever see. You have to remember, he's 6'11". He's a big man. He's lost weight. He's done what he's supposed to do. It's at this point in time to call him a disappointment. He was playing basketball when he tore his ACL. He was playing basketball when he ruptured his Achilles. Adult, nobody wants to be injured, but he's tried to bounce back from those injuries and be a productive player. And I still think coming back from these injuries that he's had, he's still going to be a productive all-star.
Yeah, I do too. And here in this last minute, I just want to get some Tua Tagovailoa news in before the combine begins later this week. And he was asked what team he would choose to play on if he got his choice of all NFL teams, the Dallas Cowboys. Tua said that was his favorite team growing up, and the Cowboys is where he'd want to go. Got to tell you, Tua, you're not going to be a Cowboy.
No.
It's good to dream, though.
That's right. That's right. At least he let everybody know who he was rooting for.
That's right. All right, that does it. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. We'll be back next Monday night. Everybody have a great Mardi Gras. For Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty, have a good one.